Hi, my name is Kaylee Longcrier, and I'm a fourth-year medical student at the University of the Incarnate Word School of Osteopathic Medicine. I'm so thankful today that I get to share with you a few reasons why I love CMDA so much and why I believe CMDA matters. When I first got into medical school, I was pretty scared and timid. I really wasn't sure if I was supposed to be here. I was thinking maybe God had made a mistake in bringing me here. I really just wanted to keep my head down and get through my studies, but thankfully, CMDA came alongside me and lifted my head and encouraged me and challenged me and loved me and even fed me through medical school. I can honestly say that I didn't just survive these last 4 years, but they were years of true abundance beyond what I've ever experienced before and beyond what I could ever ask or imagine. I've met so many friends and mentors, people who have gone before me and have walked where I hope to walk one day, and they do it so well, and they do it in the name of Jesus. I'm thankful that I get to see their example, and hopefully one day I get to emulate what they do. I'm incredibly grateful for CMDA's role in my life by providing these mentors and resources and such a rich community. I'm especially thankful for the CMDA in San Antonio, the leadership of the wonderful council members there, and the CMDA staff, Mitzi Roberts and Scott Phillips, has been incredibly impactful in my life. I can confidently say that I would not be where I am today without them. I could go on and on and tell you about how thankful I am for CMDA and the true family that I found there. I'm thankful to know that wherever residency takes me, I will have a CMDA family waiting for me and encouraging me. And I know this is only the beginning of my journey with CMDA. So thank you for everyone who has poured into me and has joined me in this journey. And I can't wait to see where it'll take me. Thank you.
Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and you're listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Well, today my interview is with Lori Kirkendall, who serves as the president and CEO of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. She's joining us on the podcast to talk about the Institute's efforts to launch recently and distribute new K-12 education standards for optimal sexual development. This conversation is important for you as a healthcare professional, I believe, and it's just as important for anyone who happens to be a parent. So let's listen in to our discussion with Lori Kirkendall. Well, it is a privilege for me to welcome to our program today Lori Kirkendall, who's got a master's in public health, and she is the president and CEO of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health, which is headquartered in a warmer place than Bristol, Dallas, Texas. And the Medical Institute is committed to advancing wholeness by empowering optimal sexual health. Lori earned her Bachelor of Science in Community Health Education from Texas A&M, and then her master's degree in public health in health promotion from Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. In 1995, Lori began as a prevention coordinator for the Women's Pregnancy Center in Houston, Texas. And then she co-founded the Fort Bend Alert, which stands for Abstinence Leadership Education and Resources for Teens Organization. Later, Lori went on to serve with Life Talk Resource Center and Aim for Success, Just Say Yes Youth Development Organization. She's held numerous other nonprofit leadership positions that include international medical and dental mission organizations. And in that process, she developed health education programs in Romania, Guatemala, as well as Honduras. Her passion has been helping young people and families to be healthy, whether that's physical health or mental health, emotional, socially, and spiritually. She and her husband, Chris, have four adult children. So welcome to our program today, Lori.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here today.
Joining me here today, my right arm, if you will, is our Senior Vice President, Dr. Jeff Barrels, our Senior Vice President for Bioethics and Public Policy.
Mike, I always look forward to these interviews, so thanks for inviting me.
Well, Lori, you come highly recommended as I think you've been president and CEO. Is it been a couple of years now of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health?
Actually, was just appointed to that role about 14 months ago in September of 2020. Dr. Joe McElhaney, our founder, was asked me and then was appointed by the board of directors to take on the mantle of the organization, which will celebrate 30 years in March.
Wow. Tell us a little bit about MISH, if I can use that acronym, the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. How did it become a leading proponent of sexual risk avoidance strategies or abstinence-based education? Jeff and I were talking earlier and wondering, you know, which term do you actually prefer, abstinence-only based education or sexual risk avoidance?
Well, I will tell you that's a bit of a loaded question in the field. My personal preference is to use them interchangeably. Sexual risk avoidance tends to lean more towards a policy perspective and a direction of specific kinds of content that is approved, you know, for use in schools and such. Abstinence education is a broader, more widely understood terminology around abstaining from sex until marriage or saving sex until marriage. So both terms can be used interchangeably. And to answer the question about how Medical Institute came to be a leader, I love to share Dr. McElhaney's story. And the short version of it is as he was practicing women's health and OBGYN infertility specialist in the Austin area, he was just troubled, really, compassionately for the many women and couples struggling to begin their families who couldn't because of damage caused by sexually transmitted diseases that they were not aware of. They didn't even know about, much less knew they had been impacted negatively by them. So Dr. McElhaney headed out into the field of prevention and education. He said it started with a set of slides that went in and out of a projector and helped young people begin to understand the risk of sexually transmitted diseases. So that sort of began a journey of supporting abstinence education in the field with content on STDs, now used interchangeably with STIs, but known nationally and internationally for that work and just really the broader work of upholding saving sex for its optimal context of healthy marriage.
Well, Lori, I'm sure that the vast majority of our members are like me, with very little knowledge of the standards-setting bodies, especially in high school public education that influence sex ed in the U.S. And I'd like if you could give us a brief overview of how that works and what's changed in the past decade.
Well, I think many are beginning to hear of the concerns of so-called comprehensive sex education. Comprehensive sex education is advanced largely by national voices such as Planned Parenthood. There's a group of three nonprofit organizations called the Future of Sex Education. That group is Advocates for Youth, CECUS, the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the U.S., and ANSWER. Those three organizations under this coalition called Future of Sex Education published what is now widely known, the so-called National Sex Education Standards, or the NSES. Those have made their way into state policy. Those have made their way into small school districts in our state here in Texas. They have sort of taken on their own identity. I've seen as many as 40% of school districts are estimated to be using those standards. But those leading voices have a different agenda than the optimal health of proponing and supporting abstinence until marriage.
So, Lori, your organization felt that it was time to have some updated standards that come from a different perspective, one that our listeners and CMDA members, I think, are going to be definitely supportive of and in sync with. And I think you call those the new K-12 standards for optimal sexual development. And could you talk to us a little bit about those new standards and why you felt they were needed for today's schools?
Yes, so the new K-12 standards for optimal sexual development is a long name, but it says so much, actually, in terms of the broad content, and it's subtitled as being founded on positive character and healthy relationships. Medical Institute first launched character-based guidelines for sex education in the late 90s as an alternative to what was being put forth then by these other more graphic, more liberal, I'm not sure all the right words to call them to characterize the different agenda they have for our children. And we wanted to provide a science-based alternative to that. Medical Institute is a science-based public health organization. So this new project, published in June, available at newsexedstandards.org, we'll probably say that again, but it was a three-year project of a national coalition that Dr. McElhaney convened about 4 years ago now to provide an alternative to compete with and ultimately replace these concerning sex education standards marching forward across the country.
All right, that gets into another question, and that is how ubiquitous in the K-12 public or even private education are the standards that you are referring to that come from these three big groups?
It has been referenced by their side that they are in 40% of school districts in the United States. I don't know that to be a definitive number. Recognize that there is great variation district by district on a local level and then state by state at the state policy level about what's really happening in our schools. I am fortunate to live in Texas. It's a very different state than some of our states on the coasts, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say what's really happening in schools when we look at the thousands of school districts on a local school-by-school basis. But as I said, their side, the Future of Sex Education, estimates 40% referencing these NSES, National Sex Education Standards. So the K-12 standards are intended to be a tool in the hands of parents and educators and policymakers to offer a different alternative focused on optimal health. And that's an important term to us, but we want to be an alternative to those NSES and give guidance for curriculum development that would support avoiding non-marital sexual activity.
Lori, let's just jump in now and let's do a little bit of a side-by-side comparison with your new K-12 standards for sex ed and compare those and contrast with the national standards and just what jumps out as being dramatically different. Help our listeners, most of whom are healthcare professionals, help them to understand.
Well, it starts with a foundation of what is our goal for young people? What is the best for their physical, mental, and relational, and I would add spiritual health? So where the approach of comprehensive sex education says, as long as there is consent and contraception, sexual activity is a normal, healthy part of life, and especially adolescents, that pleasure is a right that they have. In fact, they call that approach a rights-based approach. On the other side of optimal sexual development, we're upholding avoiding non-marital sexual activity. We're upholding the freedom to be found and the wholeness and flourishing, we love to use that word, that is found in a clear direction towards saving sex for marriage, that mutually monogamous, long-term, lifelong relationship with an uninfected partner. That's the terminology from the Centers for Disease Control. But we uphold that as what's really best for young people. I think when we see the tragedy, the epidemic of sexually transmitted diseases, along with the tragedy and epidemic of mental health and emotional health, which are often related to decisions about sex and marriage and relationships, we want to be about upholding what's best and supporting our children with that message.
Well, Lori, you mentioned the Medical Institute is very focused on evidence-based. And in fact, you had, prior to this interview, sent us a little bit of pushback that you're getting specifically from the Society for Adolescent Health and Medicine. And one of their arguments against the curriculum that you have put out is that this abstinence-only-until-marriage approach has been proven, I'm quoting them, proven time and again to be not only ineffective but also harmful, as they often withhold important health information from young people. How would you respond to that?
Well, yes. Unfortunately, our opponents are out ahead of us. They, several years ago, started saying abstinence doesn't work. And there is indeed a shortcoming of evidence base on either side of this issue of what really helps young people stay safe. And I would use that word safe, although they sometimes use it in a different way. But the evidence, when we re-examine the evidence, in fact, that's the title of a published article that I would refer folks to, is called Re-Examining the Evidence, that was put out by the Institute for Research and Evaluation. But when you really look at the data and the impact of young people, it has been very much overstated from comprehensive sex education and very much understated when you really dive into it. It's so interesting sometimes to even look at a headline and then compare it with an abstract and then compare it with the full details of that study. It just doesn't line up. It's not there to show that their approach is better, and it's certainly not there to say that a true broad-based abstinence until marriage effort supports young people in making healthy decisions. So, you know, it's easy to change knowledge. It's harder to change attitudes, values, and beliefs. It's really hard to change behavior in terms of health overall. But we think that it is our responsibility to help young people make that best decision for their future based on the best science we have.
Lori, the article that Dr. Barrows was referring to, the critique, which I want listeners to understand, it's not common for me to have a guest on this program who sends us the main piece of information being a critique of your work. So I want to compliment you on such transparency because it endeared you to me greatly. But from the Journal of Adolescent Health, Dr. John Santelli and colleagues entitled A Commentary, School-Based Sex Education in the U.S. at a Crossroads, Taking the Right Path. And I wondered if you would agree with a statement that they made early on, because it wasn't necessarily a critique of the new standards for optimal sexual development, but more of an assessment of the status of sex ed. And they said that less sex ed is happening in public education K through 12 today. And they compared some survey results from the mid-90s in adolescent students and compared them then to a 4 or 5 year period of time, 2015 to 2019, regarding the understanding of sex education, especially about birth control methods. Do you agree or disagree that things are worse off than they were in the mid-90s?
Well, as I referenced earlier, I don't know that we know very well what's happening in every school district in the nation. That would be a great study to convene. However, there are many districts that are afraid of the conflict, and there is a conflict. It is a very contentious topic. So many districts are afraid to fight the battle and don't have the credibility or the foundation to stand on that these new standards provide. So when they're looking at a more ideological, rights-based, comprehensive sex ed curriculum, and they're hearing concern from parents, many just sort of give up and don't do anything. And yet there are definitely states where comprehensive sex education is marching ahead full force. So I think that, you know, some of the parameters by which sex education is being evaluated, like you mentioned, you know, how many know the different kinds of birth control methods? Well, I've criticized, you know, much time spent on foams, creams, and jellies, if I may say it that way, for seventh and eighth graders that really isn't relevant to their understanding, where young people may be better understood. A better metric would then be to look at their attitudes towards abstaining from sex or their belief of their risks associated with that decision. So there's a lot of ways to look at it. But I think, as I said earlier, there's sort of all kinds of things happening, but certainly there is a stronger, more unified voice opposing comprehensive sex education. We don't want to just oppose it. We want to provide a strong, science-based, optimal health alternative.
Well, Lori, as you probably are aware, many of our listeners include healthcare practitioners or professionals who care for teens and adolescents in their various practices, and how could they speak truth we have a word we use around here a lot, winsome, in a winsome way to parents and their kids within their practice where sex education has become a priority, especially within a very, as we all know, anti-biblical framework that's being used at earlier stages of development. And then a corollary to that question is it possible for them to get a copy of your standards?
Yes, I'll start with the end of that question. Please go to newsexedstandards.org. They can download the full copy there of the publication, which includes the endorsements of 61 providers, medical and psychology providers, includes the glossary, includes 258 references, which trumps the other side. They only have 38, if I may say it that way. But the answer to me in terms of a clinical setting is always going to be get parents and kids talking. The most important sex educator of children is their parents. And to the degree that a clinical provider, a doctor, can facilitate that discussion in their office and beyond is a great gift to the child. So we help parents say, talk about it, talk about your values. They want to hear about it from you more than anybody else. And then I think to be able to provide the concrete health guidance, it doesn't have to be a religious or moral or political position. It is a health decision to uphold abstinence until marriage, sexual risk avoidance until marriage. So I know that those doctors have such a strong influence in this topic and not often a lot of time, but I think a few key words spoken in support of this truth that saving sex for marriage is best from a health perspective, physical, mental, relational, and spiritual, is a tremendous opportunity to shape young lives.
In this critique of your standards that came from Dr. Santel and his colleagues, they make a statement that adolescents can and do make wise choices when guided by teachers and clinicians who understand, respect, and nurture young people's decision-making capacities. It's clear that there's a tongue-in-cheek, somewhat of a disdain that they don't exactly outline clearly, but it's between the lines, there's this disdain about parents and their involvement. I'm guessing your standards have a little bit more respect for parents, and right now it seems like this is a wave that Mish can ride.
Yes, absolutely. Adolescents need us. And in many ways, our relationship changes with them. I like to use the analogy of scaffolding, where we're still right there guiding them fairly closely, but they're beginning to build their life from within. And yet they still need us. They can make great decisions, but they still need, and the opponents acknowledge that, they need that guidance still until their decision-making and judgment is fully in place, which isn't until the mid-20s. I have three college students in our home right now, or not in our home, away at college, and they still need us coaching and guiding as their brains continue to develop and they get that full judgment. So it's interesting on that one, actually, as you look at the study, they acknowledge and almost kind of discredit themselves as they try to disprove that medically inaccurate claim.
Well, Lori, you've given advice to our healthcare professional clinicians of how to approach this issue within their office. But what if some of those members say, I am a parent, I want to get engaged, I don't like what's happening in my city, in my county, and they want to take their efforts outside of the office? What advice would you give them?
Well, I first would find out what's going on in your local school districts. And I would look at the public schools, I would look at the private schools. There's some great things and some concerning things happening in private schools. Look at the charter schools, find out what's going on around you. And many of those schools have an advisory council, a health education advisory council. In Texas, it's called a SHAC, a school health advisory council. There might be a already given way to serve to influence those decisions made around curriculum. But I would absolutely take the K-12 standards, the new ones published there, and walk straight into the school board or school districts and let them know we've got a strong alternative here that you think is actually superior for the health of the students in your community.
What would you recommend for the parents listening or the aunts and uncles listening on the focus and how can we talk to our teens about saving sex for marriage based upon biblical principles? What have you found to be effective in talking to parents?
Well, I think it starts even younger. And as we look at what we're calling the five alarm fire of gender identity confusion, I think it starts with even our preschoolers and elementary students affirming who they are, who they were created to be. They are fearfully and wonderfully made, unique creations worthy of dignity and worth and value. I think we've got to be stronger and more protective upstream with those kinds of messages. Understanding their unique maleness and femaleness really lays a strong foundation against the lies and the culture that they might be born in a wrong body. And then as young people come into puberty and begin developing time of great compassion and need and relationship, walking alongside them through these really quite scary changes, and then on up into adolescence, facing those early dating and relationship decisions, it's a continual communication and looking at choices and providing the why behind your values, being a filter, learning to filter truth and lies from the culture, and pointing them always back to your family's values, your faith's values, and supporting them in that context of love, the unconditional love of parents and family.
If any of our listeners have any questions, Lori, I'd like to reach out to you. How can they reach you?
We are at medinstitute.org, medinstitute.org. My email is almost that same thing, medinstitute@medinstitute.org.
Well, Lori, I just want to say this is a great accomplishment because it's one thing to be opposed to what is being taught in our schools today. It's another to have an alternative, and that's what you've provided for us as faith-based healthcare professionals. So I encourage all our listeners to download your standards, to look at them, to compare them with what's being taught in their local schools, and hopefully get engaged and help you and others get the best sex education that our kids deserve. So thank you for your work on this.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us. We're happy to be a resource for the great work of CMDA.
Well, I wanted to point out that this curriculum we've been discussing with Lori today is not just for parents. Remember, you as a healthcare professional, you have great influence. It's also going to be beneficial for you and your practice. So I highly recommend that you spend some time learning about this new science-based curriculum. Like Lori just shared with us, these new standards give guidance for curriculum development that support avoiding non-marital sexual activity for our kids. They advance this concept by illustrating the pathway toward thriving, human flourishing, wholeness, and optimal health. It's a result of 2 years of collaborative research and development by leading national educators in the fields of sexual health, character, and relationship education. These standards provide a framework that will guide our policymakers as well as curriculum developers, educators, and parents in their efforts to maximize student success. If you'd like to find out more, just visit New Sex Ed Standards, that's all one word, newsexedstandards.org. And if you'd like more information about MISH, the Medical Institute for Sexual Health, just visit, as Lori told us, medinstitute.org today. If you're looking for more resources on this topic as a parent and as a healthcare professional that will help guide you through these difficult conversations, we have many books in the CMDA bookstore that I want to recommend to you. Among them is a book, Our Bodies Tell God's Story, Discovering the Divine Plan for Love, Sex, and Gender. It's by Christopher West. And Christopher offers a bold and thoroughly biblical look at the meaning of the body, sex, gender, and marriage. Dr. Christopher West is a best-selling author, cultural commentator, and a popular theologian who specializes in making this particular teaching accessible to all Christians. A second book I'd like to recommend is entitled Time for a Pure Revolution by Mr. Doug Herman. This book is a hard-hitting and well-researched look at the truth directed at parents as well as leaders of young people in today's sex-saturated culture. Doug Herman gives practical strategies for pursuing sexual purity and personal integrity. You can get your copies of these and other books in our CMDA bookstore by visiting cmda.org/bookstore or just call us at 888-230-2637 today. If you'd like to learn more about topics like optimal sexual development that impact your daily patient care, then just check out our CMDA Learning Center. The CMDA Learning Center offers complimentary continuing education courses for our CMDA members, and it's free. This online resource is continuing to grow with new courses to help you in your practice as a Christian healthcare professional. More than 100 hours of CE are now available, and as I said, at no cost to our CMDA members. If you'd like more information and to access the CMDA Learning Center, just go to cmda.org/learning. Well, it's not only books that we can offer to you or this podcast, but we also have some great conferences coming up. Registration for the Remedy 22 Medical Missions Conference is now open. You can come and connect with us once again as we gather in Southern California, Riverside, California, to be exact, on February 26th and 27th, 2022, for a weekend of encouragement, refreshment, and heartfelt challenge. This year's Remedy Conference features live plenary talks from Drs. David and Janet Kim, who serve at Beacon Christian Community Health Center in Staten Island, New York. Dr. Rick Donlan, who's our Memphis area director and heads up our Fellowship Plus program. Mr. Steve Noblett, who's the executive director of the Christian Community Health Fellowship. And then Fuad Masri, who's with the Crescent Project. And then I'll also be sharing. This conference is sponsored by CMDA, as well as Christian Community Health Fellowship and California Baptist University, who's hosting the conference. Seats are filling up fast, so don't wait to register. You can go to cmda.org/remedy today to reserve your spot. If you caught our podcast last week, you heard how excited I was to announce that a donor, one of our CMDA champions, has generously offered to match the first $100,000 given toward our year-end $670,000 giving goal for the months of November and December. Perhaps you've never considered a gift beyond your membership dues. Would you prayerfully consider a special gift this year to help CMDA claim this match and finish the year strong? And we'll be ready for the many new opportunities that God will give us in 2022. To make your gift today, just visit cmda.org/give or contact our stewardship team at 888-230-2637, or you can just email them using the address stewardship@cmda.org. I want to thank everyone who's already responded. Your prayers, service, and generous support are all greatly appreciated by all of us at the National Office. When this interview is released, the U.S. Supreme Court will have just finished hearing oral arguments in the Dobbs abortion case. I wanted to take a quick moment at the end of today's episode to thank you for joining with us and praying for that critical case, and to encourage you to keep praying that the Lord will move mightily to change the hearts of each and every Supreme Court justice and give them courage to make a stand against abortion. We will be sure to update you when we hear news of the court's decision in the coming months. I'm very excited about next week's podcast as I have two guests. I'll be joined by Amy and Ray, two women in medical school who've been learning how to share their faith with their patients through CMDA's campus ministry influence. It's so encouraging to hear from students like them, so you won't want to miss it. They affirm that CMDA is equipping the next generation of healthcare professionals to bring the hope and healing of Christ to our world today. So please join me next week to hear more from these two trophies of grace in healthcare. Their stories only left me with this response: wow, God. If you'd like to suggest a future guest for our podcast, you can just email us at cmdamatters@cmda.org. And if you like our podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share us on your favorite social media platform. As always, thank you for listening to CMDA Matters. As we close today, I want to share this scripture verse with you from Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 to 16. You, listener, are the light of the world. A city set on the hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. This new resource from the Medical Institute that Lori Kirkendall shared with us is designed to help you share that light of the world with your patients and with your own children. I pray you'll find it useful as you encourage your patients to make the best health choices they can make. And in doing so, you will bring the hope and healing of Jesus Christ to our world. That's what matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. We'll catch you next week, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.